Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing the 25 mistakes we make when we are raising our children. The one we are discussing currently is why children at all even commit mistakes. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion.
So we're trying to look at the reasons to why kids make mistakes, and we said two. Number three, kids love to explore.
Naturally.
Right. Naturally. And when they explore things, obviously they're going to make mistakes. They're going to break things. They're going to destroy things. They're going to do things you don't like.
Right.
It's part of his nature. He likes to explore. So that's a reason to why children make mistakes.
Right.
Simple, straightforward. Four, kids love to seek attention.
Right.
And sometimes they seek attention in the manner that they see fit, not in the manner that you see fit.
Right.
Because you're an adult with children, so their capacity of learning is much less. So we said they are ignorant, and as a parent, you are not. So obviously they're trying to seek attention, so they do things.
Stupid things, of course.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
You can say that.
Right.
Five, kids have plenty of empty time on their hands.
Right.
So when a child has plenty of time on his hands, obviously he tend to do a lot of mistakes, which is very simple, very straightforward.
We said last time in one of our previous sessions that a child with a lot of free time on his hands is going to do some dangerous stuff.
He will. I mean, not just him, but even an adult.
Yeah.
When he has plenty of time on his hand, he will commit sins.
Exactly.
We have a hadith from the Prophet or Amir al-Mu'minin. He says, you know, wasting time, it will destroy your worldly life and your hereafter.
And the hereafter. Yeah.
Because you have nothing to do, so obviously Shaitan comes along.
Right.
And what we tend to do is that when our kids have free time, we usually shove them in front of the TV.
Right, just to keep them off our backs.
TV.
Right.
While if you look at most of the psychologists and those who are in this field, they say especially children who are at least, you know, at a younger age, they should not watch cartoons more than 2 hours a week.
2 hours a week?
2 hours a week. Is it more than that and will affect the behavior of the child?
In a negative way or because...
In a negative way, obviously.
Right.
Because with cartoons, most of the cartoons, they are violent in their nature, unless you pay attention. If you take Tom and Jerry, for example.
Tom and Jerry, exactly.
Yeah, I've seen one, there's one analysis of one episode. They said in one episode there's 30 times act of murder.
30 times.
30 times where Jerry or Tom, one of them.
That sounds about right, actually.
Yeah, they keep killing each other. So they kill him in so many different ways.
Right.
But in an entertaining way.
Right, yeah.
But it's violent.
In nature, right.
Right? So when the child has nothing and you just throw him to the TV, well, that's a problem. So when he had the ideas, this was just an extra note.
Right.
So when the child has plenty of extra time, naturally, he's going to do a lot of mistakes.
Well, you seek something to entertain him.
Yeah. All right?
There even was a psychological study, an experiment once, if you remember. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but I saw it, and it was about some scientists attached a shocking device to the test subject and then put a red button in front of him. And then they left him in the room alone with absolutely no stimuli. No TV, nothing to do, nothing at all. Didn't even see the time pass by. We were just sitting there. And eventually he started to shock himself.
Yeah.
Just for some stimuli, just for something to feel and do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is exactly it. When they have time, naturally they're going to make a lot of mistakes.
Right. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, dear Sayyid.
Imam As-Sajjad alayhi salam said, "A child's right is to be kind to him when educating him, forgiving him, covering his mistakes, acting moderately towards him, and helping him."
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing the 25 mistakes we make when we are raising our children. The subject we are talking about today is why children, even at all, commit mistakes. dear Sayyid, please enlighten us further.
Alright, reason number 6 to why kids make mistakes. Kids love to be self-dependent.
Right.
They like to do things themselves. They don't like us doing their things.
Of course.
Especially as they grow older. So some parents, you see some mothers, for example, their kids are 6-year-old, 5-year-old, and still they still bathe them and take them to the shower.
Right.
No, you have to give the child his time to make mistakes himself, to be more dependent on himself.
Right.
So he needs that dependency. And when the child, since he loves to be dependent on himself, obviously he's going to make a lot of mistakes because he's just trying to learn.
No life experience, no knowledge.
For example,
right.
Even, like I said, putting him in the shower, for example, at a young age, he wants to be dependent, but he might, for example, spill the shampoo.
Right.
And break something in the bathroom. But that's okay. You got to give him time.
Right.
To make mistakes. So also, this is an important reason that most parents don't pay attention to.
Also,
that
like, it's better
love to explore by themselves.
Also, it's better, dear Sayyid, to let them be self-reliant and self-dependent in a controlled environment. Rather, they do it at home where you can, like, follow through with them, take care of them, rather than they do it outside.
Exactly. So we're saying if they make a mistake, so this could be a reason, and it's a valid reason, nothing to be worried of. Inshallah, we will look at the solutions later on how we can fix these things. 7 is that kids don't feel the value of loss.
Right.
So for example, me and you, when we lose something, we understand the importance of it.
Right.
Where a child does not feel loss, except in a few things, for example, he feels the loss.
Right.
Hunger, when he's hungry, when he needs food. Right?
Yeah, of course.
He feels that.
Human instinct.
Yeah, okay. When he needs, for example, love and affection.
Right.
He feels that.
Yeah.
Security, to be safe.
Right.
He feels that. When he's being praised.
Right.
He feels that kind of thing. When he does things for himself and he sees the achievement that he made, that's something he feels himself. So most of these things revolve around him from within and his basic human needs.
Right.
But when it comes to the outside, for example, you give him a phone that's worth $2,000,
right.
It has no value to him.
So he doesn't...
So if he breaks it and
right.
loses it, it means nothing to him.
So children do not understand monetary value.
Exactly. So they don't understand the meaning of things and how they deal with them. So therefore,
right.
that becomes a reason to why they make mistakes.
Right.
Therefore, as parents, understanding these reasons is number one step into fixing that problem, which is why kids make mistakes. So I just mentioned 7 here.
Right.
We keep them in mind. Now, how do we go on about fixing these mistakes and making the child make less mistakes? Inshallah, that's something we don't have a time for today.
Right, right.
But inshallah, I'm hoping that we can continue it in next episode.
Inshallah, we will do so in the next session. Dear Sayyid, I thank you for your time and for your valuable information and knowledge. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If your dear listeners have any questions or comments or suggestions, please contact us at our email englishradio@irib.ir, or you can visit our website parsoday.com. Alternatively, you can also find us on the various social media websites, such as on Instagram and Twitter, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for joining us.
Do you know? Islam says, it says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us contemplate upon the words of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, regarding his blissful marital life with Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. By Allah, I never angered Fatima or forced her to do something she did not like, up to the day she passed away. Nor did she ever anger or disobey me. In fact, when I looked at her, depression and sadness would vanish from my heart.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Iran has won the first title in team category of the 20th Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championship. Saman Kujuri has more.
Talented Iranian children have ranked first in team category of the 20th Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships, which was held online. Children in five different age groups, including age 5 to 7 as Group A, 8 to 9 Group B, 10 to 11 Group C, 12 to 14 Group D, and 15 or older in Group E, annually attend the contest solving multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, cube root, fractions, time, and etc. 572 students from 21 member states participated at the event.
This year, Iranian students have won the title of Champion of the Champions in two categories. Moreover, they won titles in all categories, including Champion of Champions titles, Champion titles, First Winners, and the Second Winner titles. In 2023, Iran will host the 22nd edition of the Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships.
The Smart Kids Institute holds a national competition annually in August to select members of the Iranian team for attending the PALMA Global Abacus Championships. Children from 17 to 13 years of age take part in the competition to solve some 7 mathematical test sheets using abacuses.
I am 12 years old. I have won the first title in this round of the international competitions. I have been practicing with abacus for 4 years. In the competitions, we had to solve multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, and etc.
My math teacher encouraged me to learn abacus 5 years ago. Abacus and mental arithmetic skills had great impact on my mental growth and helped me a lot in my math lessons.
The championship, organized by a non-profit organization established in 1999, is an example of what can be achieved with early intervention in abacus math and mental arithmetic education.
The purpose of the competition is to allow for observation of mental arithmetic skills from countries around the world and to promote related education to find new talents in this field. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Traveling around the world is a wish a lot of people have, but never actually get the chance. However, the Belgian-British girl has achieved that feat at only 19. Zora Rutherford flew back home on Thursday to a crowd made up of family members, friends, fans, and journalists. She completed her odyssey after just over 5 months, traveling over 52,000 kilometers. Zora is the youngest female in the world to fly around the globe. She achieved this using a microlight aircraft, which weighs only 325 kilograms and has very low fuel consumptions. That's absolutely amazing. Let's take a listen.
Right, the plane obviously is a bad for the environment. I'm not trying to claim that it is. But I have chosen one of the best aircraft to do it with. The fuel consumption is amazing. For this whole trip, it's used the same amount of fuel as a Boeing uses in about 10 minutes for the whole trip around the world, which I think puts things into perspective. Obviously, it is bad, but I'm really trying to minimize my impact as much as possible.
Zora says the scariest part of her trip was flying over the frozen expanse of Siberia, a place with no human habitation close by. The teen adventurer also had to deal with different countries' health restrictions. Zora had to take multiple PCR tests on her journey, while China's COVID-related regulations meant she could not use the country's airspace. Now, Zora says she is glad she can stay in one place for a few months. Who knows what her next adventure will be? In the world of art, a Japanese artist named Sachi is creating incredibly realistic felted wool portraits of cats. Sachi calls her artworks Wakuneko, which directly translates to frame cat. Her work is highly popular, and she has more than 600,000 followers on different social media platforms. Each portrait takes a whopping 1 month to complete. The crafting process starts with Sachi looking at dozens of photos of the cat she wants to replicate. Then she prepares the required materials before preparing the foundation and mounts the felt onto it. The most difficult part of the job is making the subject's eyes. According to Sachi, it is also the most special stage.
I think that the moment when the cat's spirit enters into the artwork can be presented through the eyes. In that sense, I have been very particular about how to make the eyes.
Sachi's portraits have inspired people around the world to adopt homeless cats. Now she hopes to hold an exhibition showing various cats, including ones with physical handicaps, in order to inspire more adoptions of shelter cats.
The Chinese New Year is less than 2 weeks away, and millions of people around the world are in festive mood. In Vietnam, people are preparing to buy each other a special gift. Since this year's animal zodiac sign is a tiger, figurines shaped like the animal are in high demand. The Vietnamese are making, selling, and buying gold-plated tiger models to commemorate the New Year. Making these sculptures is a lengthy and difficult process. It usually requires clay and copper, which are painted, gilded, and polished before being covered with 24-karat gold sheets. People tend to purchase these gifts for the luxury they evoke.
Possessing a zodiac animal model made with precious material such as gold would mean its owner is in the high class in society and is successful economically.
The gold-plated tiger model will firstly bring a luxurious feeling, and secondly, this tiger with wings model shows my hope for my works to take off and have some breakthrough in the new year.
The intricate artworks find their way to gift shops all over Vietnam. They usually sell for between $300 and $3,000.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Disability is not an obstacle to success. A group of Japanese with disabilities has proved it as they create incredible handicraft and make a living this way. A shop called Amayaka offers the items made by these disabled individuals. Located in a Tokyo neighborhood, it showcases products ranging from scarves and bags to glassware and colorful cards. Amayaka and all other workshops are part of a new movement aimed at promoting works of people with impairment. In just one of the workshops cooperating with Amayaka, about 20 disabled people are working over there. However, organizers of the movement say these people are still invisible in the society and are not paid fairly for their works despite being experienced in craftsmanship.
Some workers here have a career of more than 30 years. They have been weaving since their school days. They are so experienced that we should refer to them as artisans.
The organizers say they hope that their initiative will promote the works of the people with disabilities and help the society to start thinking about the way disabled workers are being treated. Turtles get a second chance to spread their fins after being found with bellies full of plastic. They were rescued and are now being released back to the sea in Argentina. Two green turtles and four loggerhead turtles were saved from fishing nets in Buenos Aires province. The group was taken to Grupo Marino Foundation, where they recuperated after purging 10 types of plastic from their bodies. Rehabilitation of the turtles lasted over a month and included blood tests and other procedures to make sure they were free of plastic. A biologist with the foundation says the danger of plastic is that it's silent, and usually its dangers are so gradual that it goes unnoticed.
Many times the animal appears to be in perfect health. However, during the checkup and evaluation, we found a large amount of this material inside. So it is important to get rid of the plastic before the condition worsens and it ends up causing the death of the specimens.
The turtles had mistakenly eaten plastic, thinking it was food. Wind, waves, and sunshine break down discarded plastic into tiny pieces, which litter ocean waters. Much of this plastic waste can be found on beds of seaweed that turtles forage for food. This trash ends up fatally clogging their bellies, causing the decline in the population of these graceful reptiles. The Indian administered Kashmir has the world's only floating post office. A 200-year-old houseboat on a famous Dal Lake in Srinagar, set up during the British rule in India, the post office has survived throughout the years because of its charm. Our correspondent Shahana Bhatt has more.
The Indian administered Kashmir was once a princely independent state, out of bounds for outsiders. As the ruler of Jammu and Kashmir, this allowed non-locals to own property in this picturesque region. During the British rule in the Indian subcontinent, many Britons tried to find an alternative way of living in Kashmir. Thus, houseboat on the world-famous Dal Lake came into existence. Today, the lake is a home to hundreds of such boats, which are a major attraction for tourists around the globe. This one is a unique boat, the only floating post office in the whole world. This is a 200-year-old boat built by the British. It has truly stood the test of time, as it still functions.
Post office, Dal Lake.
This is not an ordinary post office. We're standing on a heritage property. I've enjoyed my work since the very first day I came here. It's a unique experience to be working here. And every day, I get the chance to meet people from different corners of the world.
The boat is not limited to postal services. It also has a small museum where colorful stamps from the 1980s are put to display, along with a collection of rare philately stamps. The post office is a hot tourist destination in the region. Locals also come to this post office to send postcards to their loved ones inviting them to visit Kashmir.
Floating post office.
In the age of technology, electronic mail, e-cards and other internet applications have made it extremely easy for people to communicate. But sending a postcard from the floating post office gives one a really different feeling.
The floating post office underwent reconstruction in 2011 and is currently a part of the Indian postal system. Recently, the office started offering banking services, thus attracting more locals.
I have opened an account here for my daughter. It's hassle-free and this place suits my mind. It's not like the usual offices. Visiting this place with kids is like a trip.
Yet another attraction of this post office is this souvenir shop, from where everyone can buy postcards, stamps, traditional crafts and greeting cards.
This floating post office in Kashmir's Dal Lake is like a time machine. It brings people back to 2 centuries ago and shows them the history of the beautiful region. Shahana Bhatt, Indian Administered Kashmir.
Now let's go to Germany to hear the heartwarming story of how technology is turning a young boy's life around. 7-year-old Joshua has a severe lung disease which has made him unable to go to school, but now he can attend his classes from home with the help of an avatar robot. The device sits in Joshua's Berlin classroom, enabling him to listen to the classroom in real time to what his teacher and classmates are saying. Joshua can even interact with everyone else by making the robot display a blinking signal. Chronic shortage of human organs has always been an issue for patients, especially those suffering from heart diseases. But now a major scientific breakthrough is in the making. U.S. surgeons have successfully implanted a heart from a genetically modified pig into a man. Doctors had said the patient, 57-year-old, was unable to have human transplant because of his health conditions. But now he is recovering from his latest surgery. The surgeons say the man is being carefully monitored to determine how the new organ is performing. But for those who want to know why pigs, here is why. Pigs are considered ideal donors because of their size and rapid growth, among other things.
You know, it is a game changer because, we will have these organs readily available if this works, and I hope it will work. We'll have these organs available. We have the technique of genetically modifying. So if there are more tweaking required for modifying the genes, we will be able to do that, and can customize basically the heart or the organ for the patient.
The transplant is the first of its kind in the world and follows years of research. In the U.S. alone, about 110,000 people are currently waiting for an organ transplant. Also, more than 6,000 patients die each year before getting one.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Almighty. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun alaikum. Peace and salutations of Allah be upon all of you, dear friends. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, and this program today is special. We're going to speak about consultation in Islam. Today, Tuesday, is the 22nd of Jamadil Thani, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 5th of the month of Bahman, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 25th of January, 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Today, we choose a chapter Shura to listen to. Verse 38. Let's listen to
it. استجابوا لربهم وأقاموا الصلاة وأمرهم شورى بينهم ومما رزقناهم ينفقون.
And those who have responded to their Lord and established prayer, and whose affair is determined by consultation among themselves. And from what we have provided them, they spend.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The topic of today's special is consultation. Attending to divine lordship enthuses men to act upon divine injunctions. Those who love establishing prayers and expanding in the cause of Allah shall reap better and enduring bounties in the hereafter. Talha and Zubair, two personalities said unto Imam Ali alayhi salam, "We support you provided that you seek our consultation regarding all issues, since we are different from others." The noble Imam, peace be upon him, replied, "I look into the Book of Allah and prophetic traditions and act upon them. I have no need for your consultation in this respect. However, if I come to issues for which I could not find any argument thereto and feel the need to seek your consultation, I will do likewise."
You could easily take away everything you've given me. And I try to remember not to take anything for granted. 'Cause I know that one day, suddenly, this will all come to an end. So my last wish is for you.
IRIB English Radio, today's special and consultation in Islam, we'll listen to. Undoubtedly, one of the greatest blessings that Allah has bestowed upon human being is intellect, so that he achieves prosperity with proper use of it. Intellect has helped men in choosing the best ways, and consultation in affairs is one of the most important proofs of accurate use of intellect. Islam, as the last and most perfect religion, attaches great importance to consultation and always reminds the benefits of consultation. In Surah Baqarah, verse 233, Surah Al-Imran, verse 159, and Surah Shura, verse 38, Allah Almighty has referred to people's votes, and even naming one of the Surahs of the Holy Quran, Shura, has doubled the importance of consultation in Islam.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi nasta'in. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with the role and effect of consultation in Islam. When someone consults other people regarding any job or any important decision to take, when someone consults several reliable people, he would certainly be away from making some silly mistakes. And at the same time, it's indicated in this connection that other infallible personalities received consultation from people much younger than themselves. In the case of the prophet Abraham, who was around at the age of 100, he received the consultation of his son Ismail, who was at the age of, for example, 12 or 13, for example, just a teenager. Imagine that an old man at the age of 100 receives the suggestions and consultation of his son at the age of, for example, 12 or 13, quite a teenager. According to ordinary calculation, certainly nobody expects, a teenager to be as experienced as an old man at the age of 100. However, the act of receiving consultation from even a young man, from a teenager, shows that, first of all, you respect him or her, and then it shows that, you want to be on the safe side. You don't want to take any decision out of arrogance, out of ignorance, or out of being egocentric.
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the infallibles, lessons from the life of the infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
The importance of consultation in Islam. Now let's speak a little about consultation as viewed in the traditions. Prophet of Islam, Muhammad al-Mustafa, peace and salutations of Allah be upon him and his family, said, "No one has ever been wretched after consultation, and no one has become prosperous through being satisfied with his own opinion." Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "One who only follows his own opinion will perish, but one who consults people shares with them in their intellect." The noble prophet of Islam said, "If your good people are your rulers, your rich ones are generous, and your affairs are carried out in consultation with each other, then the surface of the earth is better for you than its depth. However, if your rulers are your evil ones, your rich are miserly, and your affairs are not carried out in consultation with each other, then being under the earth is better for you than being on it."
I see you in the wings that chase the night, circling the warm glow candlelight. I hear you in the wind as the two poles spin, whispering the truth your heart holds in. I feel you in the chill as the seasons turn, laying down a seed with its lessons learned. A circle spins a perfect line, free from borders, free from time. I close my eyes and clear my mind. A circle joins your love with mine.
Now, how can we consult? We learned that advice should be given for the sake of Allah to be effective. It should also be as much as one being advised can accept. We cannot advise people in any way we want. We must learn how to advise, how to express our advice, and how to influence the person being advised. Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him, said, "You are not free to say whatever you wish, since the Prophet of God has said, May Allah have mercy on the servant who speaks well and benefits, or is silent or remains secure. Imam Ali, peace be upon him, said, refrain from speaking about what you do not know how to do and do not know the truth about it. What you say is a sign of your intellect, and your words inform others of the degree of your knowledge and recognition.
Now, there are certain places or answers here in these certain areas there is no consultation. What are these areas? Matters of religion. Whether the prayers should be 5 times a day, or we increase it to 7 times, or we reduce it to 3 times. This is not our business. Here, there is no room for consultation. Whether the month of Ramadan should be 30 days or make it 60 days, because we are enjoying the iftar, mashallah, here in the masjid. Let's make it. One time I went to a community in another state, and they were happy, 30 nights, mashallah, Ramadan. They were collecting money, you know, and the iftar was good. So they said, Sayyid, can we go on and for another 30 days? I said, no, I want to go back to my wife and my kids. You stay here another 30 days. Yeah. Here, we cannot make shura here. Here, Allah said, this is the number, and I am giving you the text. And one of the areas that there is no shura, God is not going to consult the people regarding that matter, is the concept of what? Imam and Khilafah. God says, listen, I have experience. No matter how you choose, listen, before I say this. There is a difference between a president of a country, prime minister, and the imam. Big difference. Imam is appointed by God, divinely appointed. This is a divine office. The president is not a divine office. For the president, you may elect a president. Islam does not say don't go to the ballot box, don't elect a president, don't elect prime minister, don't elect this political party. No, participate. But Islam says this is different from that office. That office is permanent. That office is made and created and chosen and appointed by God. While these offices here, this president and that president, we make them today, tomorrow we dismantle them. People today, they elect this president, tomorrow they may impeach him because he commits something gross. He violates the Constitution. So there is a difference. There is a difference.
Dear brothers and sisters, that was all for today's special from IRIB English Radio. Inshallah, we join you in another episode. Till then, we leave you in Allah's blessings. Have a nice time.
Crazy, who you praying for? They told me there is nothing, who you looking for? Stop doing what you're doing, cause there is no hope. Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes, I was mesmerized. But deep inside I know that there's a better world. Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
Thank you.
From the day he started his presidential campaign, U.S. President Joe Biden told the world that America wants to go back to Iran's nuclear deal. From that day, Israel started to threaten the world that if the U.S. goes back to the deal, it would take matters into its own hands. So as the talks continued between Tehran and the P4+1 group of countries, Israel's voice of agony grows louder. Israel has launched a pressure campaign to make sure that the countries negotiating with Iran in Vienna do not agree to what Israeli officials call a bad deal, meaning a deal that allows Tehran to make nuclear bombs. The very idea of building a nuclear bomb is totally rejected by the Iranian government. In 2003, Iran's leader issued a fatwa that forbade the production and use of any form of weapon of mass destruction, which includes nuclear weapons. However, accusing Iran of going after the nukes is a strategy Israel uses to legitimize its hostile stance against Iran. The regime has even beefed up its military activities. In November, Israeli, Emirati, and Bahraini naval forces, for the first time, rehearsed joint security operations with a U.S. warship. A month earlier, Israel launched a war game at a desert airbase just north of the port city of Eilat, which sent fighter planes from the occupied territories and seven other countries roaring into the skies. Israel also allocated $1.5 billion to prepare the Israeli armed forces for a potential strike against Iran nuclear sites. In fact, there are near daily warnings from Israeli political and military officials as well. In the latest move in a series of threats, Israel's Minister of War Affairs ordered his forces to prepare a military option. Benny Gantz warned the world that Israel would take matters into its own hands if a nuclear agreement did not constrain Iran the way Israel wants it to.
Recently, the Chief of Staff, Aviv Kohavi, said that Israel is preparing to strike Iranian nuclear targets if needed. Are those preparations complete?
They will never complete. Before the only time of completing them will be the time that we will actually conduct them. Till then, we will continue to build them, to improve them. This is something that any military needs to do. We are working on it. We have them in our hands, of course, but we will continue and constantly improving them to the highest professional level possible. The Iranian nuclear aspiration must be stalled. If the world stops them before, very much good. But if not, we must stand independently and we must defend ourselves by ourselves.
What Gantz said could be interpreted as a direct threat. However, there are multiple military experts in and outside Israel who believe Gantz's statement was nothing but an empty threat. Several current and former senior Israeli military officials and experts say that Israel lacks the ability to attack Iran. Military experts say Tel Aviv can't pull off an assault that could destroy or even significantly delay Iran's nuclear program, at least not anytime soon. Now, one might ask why carrying out an assault on Iran would be impossible, given the fact that Israel has the latest military weaponry, fighter jets, and support of the United States. True, Israel has a long history when it comes to air attacks, but it won't be as easy as it was when it bombed Egypt, Gaza, Iraq, Lebanon, Sudan, Tunisia, and Syria. Not easy, at least, without potentially catastrophic consequences. To be sure, one could not compare Israel's bombing of such facilities in Iran to its air attacks against Iraq's Osirak reactor in 1981 or Syria's Al-Kubar facility in 2007. Relek Shafir, a retired Israeli Air Force general who was a pilot in a 1981 strike on an Iraqi nuclear facility, said,
Bombing Iran's nuclear facility is almost impossible. Iran has dozens of nuclear sites, some deep underground, that would be hard for Israeli bombs to quickly penetrate and destroy. The fact is, the Israeli Air Force does not have warplanes large enough to carry such large bombs, so the more protected sites would have to be struck repeatedly with less effective missiles, a process that might take days or even weeks. The other obstacle is geography. If Israel decides to carry out strikes on Iran, its warplanes must fly over 3,000 kilometers to get to Iran. This would cause fuel shortages as the planes have to fly the same amount to go back to Israel. Israel has already ordered jets that can make such flights at a cost of $2.4 billion, but the aircraft are backordered and Israel is unlikely to receive even one before late 2024. There's also the fear of retaliation. Naturally, if Iran gets attacked, it will respond vehemently. Some Israeli planes would almost certainly be lost during the sorties. Their pilots would be killed or taken prisoner, and such losses would have huge consequences for Israel. Let's not forget that Iran is a country of nearly 86 million people, with the potential ability to mobilize its networks all over the Middle East to retaliate. From Lebanon to Palestine and Syria, pro-Iranian forces surrounding Israel could make the regime pay a huge price for any attack. Israel's famous missile system is no good for such a confrontation either. The Iron Dome was never tested in a real battle. It only intercepted man-made Gazan rockets, not real missiles or rockets. It's not even capable of intercepting those handcrafted missiles coming from Gaza. So, if a war erupts, it is safe to say that the Iron Dome can't be much of a help to Israelis. In the meantime, Iran has a formidable missile arsenal of its own capable of precision strikes, which can easily respond to an Israeli bombing of its nuclear sites by going after softer targets.
They always shoot at Israel rockets, but in 2004 or 5, people start to get killed. Make me very annoyed that we don't have a solution. And also, I remember even 91, when Iraq shoot missiles in Israel, we have no solution. You know, everything was, Tel Aviv was empty, okay. They shoot around Tel Aviv. And I decided that we have to do something. Although nothing had been done around the world and everybody said it cannot be done.
One doesn't need to be a general or a strategist to find out that the declarations by the Israeli officials about Israel's readiness for a military strike are empty and pointless rhetoric. All you need is to look at the past few decades. Since January 1995, Israel has been saying that Iran is much closer to producing nuclear weapons than previously thought and could be less than 5 years away from having an atomic bomb. 27 years later, Israel continues threatening to bomb Iranian nuclear facilities. And yet nothing, it's quite clear. Israel is just playing pretend.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is...